This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
92.9 The Game, the Abe TL Show. Hanging out in the Kia Studios. I'm here for a little over another hour, here till 1:15, before we hand things off to Big Ten Basketball, as we are really getting down to the nitty-gritty. It's March this week, next weekend will be March Madness. Well, it won't be March Madness. It'll be the start of the month of March Madness. You get the point. And so some teams are trying to make their last gasp cases to get into the NCAA tournament. Georgia's one of those teams that is looking for another win. Did not come yesterday. Had an opportunity. Now, I don't know if they were ever winning the game. I meant an opportunity as like that was their opponent, was number one Auburn. And they're looking for another profile win. They have two really good wins. They're going to need at least one more if they want any shot to get into the tournament. I would say the same thing about the game you'll hear today on 92.9 The Game, Indiana. They have got to beat a top 15-ranked Purdue today at home if Mike Woodson wants any shot at getting into the tournament in his final season as the Hoosiers head coach. Also tonight on 92.9 The Game is going to be Atlanta Hawks basketball. You talk about a team that needs a win against a squad that's a little bit ahead of them in the standings. We'll talk about the Hawks a little bit coming up, but it'd be nice to get one against Detroit here, and this one is a home game. So there's still some opportunities after they weren't able to finish it out the other day against Orlando. Been talking about the Falcons and the NFL draft, and I got Noelle here hanging out with me. I thought she was going to part ways at noon and begin her actual Sunday, but that is nigh the case. Not today. No, it's not. She's going to be here with me the whole time. And, you know, I was kind of just chatting with her in break. I wanted to ask her before we get to outside the perimeter her thoughts on the discussion we've been having. And the question was very simple. The answer, I think, quite a bit less so. What's the strongest statement you can definitively make about the Falcons draft pick at 15? So, Noel, where do you land on this? Because I don't really have one that I can confidently believe in.
I am at, they will be a Falcon, Abe. They will be a Falcon. I'm kidding. For me, the most definitive thing I think I can say is that it will be a player on the defensive side of the ball. I can't guarantee you it'll be a DN or a pass rushing linebacker that we more than likely want, or even at D-tackle. But I do think that they will play defense.
I would like to think that. And I do hope that's where it heads. But I don't like... It's tough. It's tough for me to definitively say that because I've been thrown for some loops in recent drafts by Terry Fontenot. Now, some of those loops have worked out, right? Like I'm not criticizing the decisions, but they do have a tendency to do things that I maybe didn't expect. And there's definitely a position of need, in my opinion, an opportunity to upgrade the offensive line. Now, it feels like a no-brainer to go defense. It feels like a no-brainer to go pass rush. But again, it gets so much more difficult drafting at 15 than it does in the top 10. And you just don't know where the run comes. And what I mean is a positional run where 5 out of 8 picks are pass rushers. All right, Abdul Carter's not going to be there. I think we understand that. Are the two Georgia boys, Jalen Walker and Mykael Williams, if they go, does that also mean that Shamar Stewart and James Pierce are off the table? And then what's the drop-off? What's the drop-off between them and other guys? Guys like Mike Green, who maybe is more back end of the first round, front end of the second round. Are you taking that leap at 15? Or maybe there is a game-changing cornerback. It's really interesting. By the way, Andy and Randy are going to chat with Raheem Morris on Tuesday. And we believe this will be the first comments heading into the combine, and certainly since all this stuff with Kirk Cousins has gone down. So you're definitely going to want to tune in. I believe that's going to take place 11:30 on Tuesday with Andy and Randy here on the Midday Show. And I'm sure some of the other shows will replay it, Dukes and Bell, throughout the day. Assuming the fellas do a good job, which I expect them to. So that's something to look forward to on Tuesday. All right. It is a little bit past noon here on the Abe TL Show. Let's go ahead and head OTP.
It may be the Abe TL Show, but it's bigger than just Atlanta. It's time to go outside the perimeter.
Spanning the globe. Spanning the globe.
On the Abe TL Show, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
The top national sports stories, headlines, and topics. And I'm a couple days late on some of these stories, but I still wanted to discuss and bring them up. Victor Wembanyama, deep vein thrombosis. And that's going to cost him the rest of the regular season. And hopefully they can get that solved and settled before next season. I know that has some long-term concerns, but hopefully not there. But that's not the only tough news for the Spurs. Also came out over the weekend that Greg Popovich, who has been out for a while, is not expected to return this season. He suffered a mild stroke, what they're terming a mild stroke, in November, and has been on the road to recovery from that. And we're going to be honest here, he's not coming back this season, and there's definitely a chance that he never coaches an NBA game again, if we're going to be realistic. But certainly our best thoughts and wishes out to both Victor Wembanyama and certainly the Hall of Famer Greg Popovich. MLB and ESPN to separate. Noel, I want you to pop back on here on this story as well. Seems to be some issues with what ESPN's offer was, what ML believes they're getting in return, and there's just nobody seems to be happy about the fading partnership of ESPN and MLB. Of course, ESPN has held Sunday Night Baseball for a while now. They would sometimes have a midweek game as well. Apple TV has picked up the Friday night package. Fox also has a package that includes the World Series as well. So it seems like MLB and ESPN are going to separate. Now, there's always a chance that MLB goes back to ESPN if they re-up the offer. It feels like it's been like a lot more of a war of words than need be necessary, and maybe some bridges were burned, but ultimately money speaks loudest, and so there's still an opportunity for these two to come together. But the question remains, like, if MLB's out, what does ESPN turn to? And I know you cover the Atlanta Dream here for 92.9 The Game, among others. I do start to wonder if ESPN dives a lot deeper into the WNBA, if there's an opening down the road here on Sunday night and other windows that they could look at. And maybe there's another fringe sport I'm not thinking of. At pickleball, maybe they make a run at it. I know they were airing the celebrity pickleball with Andre Agassi the other day. Like, maybe they make a run at something unexpected, but just on the surface, it feels like a real opportunity for primetime WNBA.
Yeah, they might try to throw everything at the wall to see what sticks, but WNBA should definitely be a part of that program. It's a league that's been growing like crazy. You see the numbers for the finals. You see the numbers for Unrivaled. And for it to be a new three-on-three situation, the numbers are kind of good there. So I don't see why you wouldn't. It's already a sport you kind of deal with. It's a sport that's looking for more representation. It would be, I think, a year ahead of the CBA, so to kind of give everybody an idea of what it would look like if they, you know, inked a longer contract. Yeah, I don't see why not.
The other thing that's kind of a wild card here, and again, I don't know contracts necessarily and how it would work, but you're going to be coming off of the 2026 Winter Olympics. They could double down on they could double down on the NHL too, and maybe expand their package there. There's some games that air exclusively on like ESPN Plus nationally that maybe could get to the TV because. I think we talked earlier about what the Four Nations face-off has done for hockey. Did anyone watch the hockey games yesterday? Like, anyone tune in? Like it's really not expanding the NHL. It was great in the moment, Team USA versus Team Canada. I don't think the NHL's TV audience is going to grow because of those games. Could that happen over the course of the Winter Olympics next year? And could ESPN try and kind of get on the tail end of that? I don't know, but...
If you jump on it, yeah, you could. Like, it would have to be, to your point, right after the Olympics, so where the excitement and hype is already there and you kind of latch onto it.
Well, that's what happened. Like, NBC Sports tried to do, and USA did it as well, like a curling night in America.
True. I do remember that.
But it doesn't...
But I think hockey's more important, more has more of a foothold than curling.
Of course.
So I think it makes a little bit more sense
with hockey.
But it's not right. No,
it's not new. It's not chic. It's not trendy.
Nah, it's none of those things.
So
but if you're trying to feel...
That's the question, though. Is there a sport that either in the Winter Olympics or just in general becomes trendy as a televised sport? Right? Like, they tried cornhole, didn't take.
Mm-mm.
Not a great TV sport. I'll be honest, and I play pickleball now. I try and watch it. It's not a good TV sport.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. I think that's why we're looking at things that are like already established but maybe underserved to slide in that spot. Because reinvent the wheel by creating a frenzy for a fringe sport is probably less advantageous than like latching onto the NHL and the W and seeing if you can pull their audience to you instead of trying to create an audience.
Again, I'm not sold that ESPN and MLB don't figure something out, but you're talking
about
Sunday night prime time.
Ooh.
Like for the course of 6 months?
Yeah.
Like they have a Sunday night baseball game every Sunday night for. Again, what is it, 5 months, 6 months?
Yeah, are we talking April to October? April to September?
That is not like... All right, so ESPN reportedly is also parting ways with Top Rank Boxing, right?
Ooh.
A lot of events that I would watch on ESPN+, Plus, they would put some of them on TV. Normally in a Saturday night, late night, after like a college football game, the card starts at like 10 or 11 p.m. This is 8 o'clock on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you slide more NBA there as well, depending on the package. It's very interesting to see such a big property go away. And
yeah, because that's a huge time slot, like you're saying. Like, that Sunday night prime time slot has been built up so big.
Like,
right. It's been built up so much, especially for that network. That's a huge slot to fill.
Unless it's a night race, NASCAR's done and out of the way.
Yep.
By the time it's 8 p.m., again, unless it's West Coast, Pebble Beach, the golf tournament is done, 6 or 6:30. You do what you do. You eat dinner. You walk the dog. You settle in, and it's Sunday night. Like, it's been a mainstay pretty much as long as I can remember that potentially is going to go away. I'm just really interested because you know me. And for those of you who don't, I watch everything. Like, I will watch any sport that's good. Like, the U.S. mixed doubles curling trials are going on right now. Like, I've already watched that on Peacock over the course of the last couple of days. They have game two today, and if Dropkin and his partner win, they'll be the mixed doubles representative. But, I mean, it's just interesting to see what is potentially going to fill that time slot. Because it's valuable, especially for, like, a league like the WNBA. The biggest issue with WNBA viewership, in my opinion, is that they're always competing with something.
Something else, yeah. Yep. Always.
If they can get 8 p.m. on Sunday night.
Just to themselves.
And maybe baseball goes elsewhere. There is still some sort of Sunday night game. But
right, but you would have
If that's on Netflix, or if that's on Apple, it's a whole different discussion.
Right, you would have the big time slot on the big network.
But if you're putting the New York Liberty and the Las Vegas Aces.
I was just about to say that, yep.
And you got to be smart about the teams. That's the one thing the WNBA has got to be careful about. And look, I watch a fair amount of Atlanta Dream games. They can't be on Sunday night basketball. You know what I mean? And I know you got some new players.
The juice isn't there yet. Like, they right. have a marketing issue, in my opinion.
There's a reason you don't see, I don't want to, like, the Detroit Tigers on Sunday Night Baseball.
No, I get what you mean,
like,
yeah.
There's
a reason why, like, the Braves get a
yeah.
handful of them, and the Dodgers get a handful
right.
of them, and the Yankees and the Mets. That's just the way sports works. We know that. That's why we see the Lakers a million times on ESPN all year long. We get it.
I'll be honest. I want the weirdest sport possible at Sunday night. Like, give me something that no one's going to watch.
Some ESPN
but me.
Ocho?
Give me esports. Televise some
okay.
esports. And I knew that I know they do a little bit of, like, iRacing or whatever. Give me, like, Smash Brothers Melee on ESPN. I don't even mean, like, a joke ESPN 8
No, I know what
joke.
You mean. On ESPN. I mean, it makes more sense now.
They probably wouldn't put, like, first-person shooters on there.
Yeah.
I understand that, and that's going to take away from a lot of it. But, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Ultimately, I think that ESPN and MLB find a way to partner back up. That's my... But if they don't, it's very interesting. All right, I ran out of time here on Outside the Perimeter. I got a couple stories I still want to talk about, though. So we're going to talk about that and also get some Hawks discussion here in our next segment. After that, Joe Patrick is going to join at 12:30. We still got a lot coming your way. It is the Abe TL Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. You know, I want to open that up to suggestion, actually. And I just put it on Twitter. At Abe Gordon, but we can take some phone calls as well. 404-726-0929. And welcome back into the Abe TL Show. It's Abe Gordon here in the Kia Studios. And we were talking last segment. I had an idea, Noel, in the break. I'll tell you about it here in a second. We were talking about ESPN and MLB and what happens if they don't go back to the table and meet and come to an agreement on an extension of their contract. That MLB might be walking away from ESPN. What does that mean for the slot that previously was Sunday night baseball? What are some of the suggestions that ESPN could use to fill what is, I think, a pretty enviable spot in terms of timeline in each sports weekend? You wrap up your sports weekend watching Sunday night baseball, at least I did, while working on the rundowns for Andy and Randy, or meal prepping for the week, or whatever it is that people do as they wrap up their weekend. Sunday Night Baseball was on in the background, and what maybe takes that up now? I have a couple thoughts, and we got a tweet there from the chef who said disc golf, the Pro Tour, would be a nice suggestion. I've watched some disc golf on YouTube before. I haven't watched it on TV. It's not the best spectator sport if you don't play it. It's one of those things that's going to be very tough to grasp an audience. But that's a fine suggestion. I also watched some AUDL. Atlanta has a squad. And Ultimate Frisbee, essentially. Ultimate Disc. I don't know. There's a couple of things. You don't necessarily have to fill it all with one sport, right? Like, you can maybe amp up your college basketball schedule until college basketball rolls out. Maybe the UFL, that spring football league, they have a deal with ESPN. Maybe that gets moved to Sunday night. But, Noel, here's what I thought of during the break, and I don't know the finances behind all of this and what does or doesn't make sense. I don't know how you acquire the rights to all of this stuff. but I think it would actually be cheaper, which if ESPN is looking for a cost-cutting solution, that maybe it draws an audience, maybe it doesn't, just acquire rights to every sports movie you can and run a different sports movie on Sunday night.
Okay, now check this. Since it's
there's no production
Disney,
crew, you're not live sports, own? It'd be way cheaper than like running an actual live program. It's just about acquiring the rights.
Right, but if you're Disney, like how many of these rights do you already have?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So you could probably go ahead and just get the ball rolling while you're trying to clear the things that you don't own. But
I mean,
you know,
there's plenty of movies. There's plenty of movies, obviously, that are sports movies that aren't Disney, obviously.
Right, yeah.
But you start with a base of what Disney has, and you try and collect as many rights to all of these other films. And if you can't find a suitable sport, just put on every sports movie you've got, one a week, and you just rotate through them. And that's what fills the block. Is that a terrible idea or a great idea? I think it's a great idea.
It is a great...
Right?
It's a great alternative if you cannot find another sport at the price point you want. It's a great alternative.
But it's also like, all right, so like, let's just say you have a three-week run, and I'm just naming three sports movies of Field of Dreams, Caddyshack, and Victory. Okay, and for those who aren't familiar, Victory is a soccer movie with Pele, Sylvester Stallone during World War II. It's a wild film. It's kind of a sports movie, though. I think you get the point. I couldn't give all bangers of movies, so we went with Victory along with Field of Dreams, and what was the other one I said?
You already stretched it with Caddyshack, so why not?
Yeah. Say it's Tin Cup. Say it's whatever. A Legend of Bagger Vance. I don't know what you consider.
I mean, yeah. Golf movies
are tough to sports movies. But like, you all right, what are you getting? Like 1.2 million? Like 700,000 people to watch that? Like, yeah. That's more than you'd get for pickleball. That's more than you'd get for, no offense, like disc golf.
I mean, and it's not even a new idea, right? Like, they used to have these movies of the week back when
they
all
watched, like,
cable and network
television. But it wasn't always a sports movie.
Right. Yeah, you're just tweaking the idea to fit the format they need. But, yeah.
Now, it's probably less of an audience than you would get for, like, a top-tier WNBA game, but there's no cost.
Right.
There's no cost. You're not sending a broadcast crew. You don't have cameramen and editors and digital writers. There's no crew.
Right. At minimum, you pay the license fee.
Someone steps in and hits play on the DVD, and out it goes.
You might have a host for it just to try to,
if you want to.
Like, you know, just to try to, you know, give it that flair, you know, and now we're going to present, you know, whatever. But to your point, yeah, ultimately, you're going to rent the license to this thing. It's going to be pennies on the dollar. You're going to press play. We're going to watch this thing for 2 hours stuffed full of commercials, and that's going to be baseball Sunday night.
Yeah.
It definitely could work.
I think it could work. 404-726-0929 if you have any suggestions on what should replace Sunday Night Baseball.
I'd watch Dodgeball.
If it does indeed. There you go.
Yeah, I'd watch Dodgeball on Sunday night.
And it could be like real movies too. Like, obviously, like the scenes from Miracle were just shown at the Four Nations Face-Off. But like, you can have real movies too. Like, we were just talking about like Caddyshack.
Yeah,
and, like,
you can throw a Marshall in there.
Yeah.
So what's another great
Friday
movie,
Night Light? There's plenty of North
Friday
Dallas 40.
North Dallas.
You can do a Longest Yard doubleheader where everyone tunes in for the original and then tunes out for the Adam Sandler version.
The Replacements.
Great movie. I mean, they look, the thing is, you got 52 Sunday Night Baseball, or not Sunday Night Baseballs, but I mean, how many Sunday Night Baseballs do you have? Probably 20. 25?
It's plenty of films to film.
Right? Like, you're not obviously doing Sunday night at 8 p.m. Maybe you do. Maybe you do run a film Sunday night at 8 p.m. in football season. You're going against the NFL. No one's watching it anyways.
Right. It's cheaper than putting together a production.
Thing, yeah. So, I mean, maybe you do extend it beyond just Sunday night baseball. But there's obviously so many good, and maybe you avoid some bad sports films, right? Like, but there's so many good sports films out there, if you can acquire the rights to them, and you put out a great point I didn't even consider with the partnership they already have, being in the same family as Disney, you have all the Disney sports movies.
Whatever they bought from Fox, whatever Disney movies Fox did, they got those. They got a pretty decent catalog already.
I heard the Fox thing might be. I heard the Fox thing might be falling apart.
Partnership
with Fox is.
It's
on the outs. I was reading a story today where ESPN Plus might not be airing as many Fox Sports properties as we once thought. I don't know. It was just literally, I was sitting here in the break. I was like,
I like it. Just
run movies, man. Like, and you know me as a movie person. I'm always looking for an excuse to like flip on a movie and it's just there. ESPN on Sunday nights. You kidding me? It's such a simple idea.
Yeah. Could you imagine watching the Iron Claw on Sunday night? ESPN, man.
Yeah. What's the other one that's coming out with The Rock? Smashing Machine?
Oh, yeah. See, there we go.
I haven't seen it. I don't know when that's coming out, but I'm looking forward to that. Anyways, a couple other stories I didn't get to, and I want to talk about the Hawks. And maybe I'll push some of this Hawks discussion to 1 o'clock as well. But NFL Combine is this week. Travis Hunter's going to be working out as a defensive back and only as a defensive back. We kind of talked about that. I think as a TV event, which is what the Combine's supposed to be, he should be working out at both DB and receiver, but they're not letting him do that. Just draws more eyes to the Pro Day, the Colorado Pro Day, in my opinion. Quarterbacks I'm interested in, and I probably should have done better research. I'm assuming these guys are going to be at the Combine. I didn't even look. But I think there's such a great discussion over who is QB3. And I'm not saying all of these guys have an opportunity to be QB3, but some of the players I am interested in for the quarterback position, Jackson Dart, Quinn Ewers, Riley Leonard, and Will Howard. And so I'm just interested in those four. Riley Leonard's not going to be QB3, but I am interested to see how he's fared and how he's viewed. The Rams are letting Matt Stafford and his agent gauge value in the market. I think it's a situation where the Rams are saying, all right, go find out what we can actually get for you, and then we'll kind of have our own discussion of new contract, trade, whatever the next step is. But I think ultimately the Rams are going to end up just keeping Matt Stafford. Like, you can't, again, we talked about confidence in the Falcons draft. You can't confidently move on from Matt Stafford in favor of Aaron Rodgers. Like, that's not a confident move. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. And then the new trend in college football is canning spring games. Texas nixed theirs. Ohio State is going to modify theirs. And look, some of these reasons I understand. You're concerned about wear and tear. You're trying to avoid injuries. The Matt Rule at Nebraska thing where he's worried about other schools stealing his players based on spring game videotape, like that's not real. That's not a real thing. And not because it's Nebraska. Like, if Ohio State take, like, the coaches who are, they already know. They get reports. They know who's good, who's bad, who's on the way out, who's going to lose their starting role, whatever it is. It's not because you're spring game. Now, for in-person, like doing a much more of a, like, fan fest type of event where players can, where fans can come and meet the players and do something like that, it might work, but only on campus. Like, there's viewers nationwide who want to tune in and watch Texas, who want to tune in and watch Alabama or Georgia, that can't maybe make it to Athens on a specific Saturday, that they're doing whatever the alternative to a spring game would be. So, I don't know. I just think it's not that big a deal. If they want to avoid injuries, I understand that. I don't know, just do what the NFL does, man. Like, let the players have fun. Go do a flag football game. If you're just going to have fun and make it an event, have fun making it an event. Do a skills challenge and have the four quarterbacks on scholarship do a longest throw and kickers can compete and do whatever you want. But have it, you know, make it fun for the fans. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. All right, we're going to hit a break here because coming up next, Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game, Atlanta Falcons reporter. I saw him, ran into him yesterday at the Atlanta United game. We might talk a little bit about United as well. But a lot of Falcons discussion coming your way when Joe Patrick joins me. It's Abe Gordon here on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game, the Abe TL Show. rolling on. Just a couple of segments left before we hand things over to Big Ten basketball, Purdue and Indiana, in essentially a must-win game for the Hoosiers if they want to get into the tournament in Mike Woodson's final season as head coach of the Crimson and Cream. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. That's Atlanta Ford dealer. And welcome in Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game, Atlanta Falcons reporter and insider. And we've been talking a lot of Falcons here, and good afternoon, Joe. One of the questions I had for you is kind of a discussion I was having, because there's not a lot I can confidently say about the Falcons' plans with number 15. Like, I'd like to suggest that they're going to take a pass rusher, but I don't know if I can really say that confidently. I'd like to suggest that they're going to take at least the defensive player. I don't even know if that's on tap or even sticking at 15. So what's the strongest statement that you can currently make about the Falcons' plans with the first-round draft?
I mean, like, listen, I get the skepticism for thinking the Falcons could do something off the wall and do something unpredictable like they have done recently, not even just in the Michael Penix one, which was a shocker, but I think even, you know, to draft Bijan Robinson, I think surprised a lot of people in that draft. And, you know, heck, going all the way back to Kyle Pitts, this team has been known to kind of do some different things. But in this one, I just can't get over the fact that the needs are so much concentrated on that defensive side of the football. I would be really surprised if they don't target one of those positions with that number 15 pick. Now, will it be the edge? I think that is something that can be debated because, you know, while I think that is the move that they should and probably will go, I think that there are arguments that you can make that they could go in other positions. But listen, I get the skepticism, but I have to think that that's going to be what they're going to address, because they know that basically I think that there's more predictability of what this team is going to be able to produce offensively with Michael Penix under. I think that they actually feel pretty confident about, even though it's just a 3-game sample size, what exactly he put on tape. And this Falcons team is ultimately going to go as far as that defense takes them. So I think they do actually understand that that's really where the resources need to be deployed this offseason.
Joe Patrick, Atlanta Falcons insider here for 92.9 The Game. And Joe, it's kind of just stumbled to me, and obviously I want to get to the offseason timeline with a lot of different things, but the question about Kirk Cousins and his roster status, obviously he's going to weigh heavily here, but is this a situation where you think Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris at least had to wait till they talked to people at the combine to see if there was any chance of anything? Is there a world in which something does go down at the combine that either gives them a clearer picture in general or action itself in terms of his movement?
Yeah, I definitely think that. Well, I've always thought that, you know, whenever this happened, there was always, it obviously produced a very visceral reaction for fans, certainly, to just say, let's get rid of this guy today. Like, don't waste any time. And that may be how, even some people in the Falcons building may have felt in their gut. But I think that everybody knew that this was always going to be kind of a drawn out process that was going to go toward that March 16th deadline of when he would be owed that $10 million roster bonus. And I think that, you know, being able to talk to other teams at the NFL combine is probably part of that. That's obviously how Cousins kind of felt to the Falcons. If you remember last year, it was kind of these, you know, clandestine meetings between, GMs, in dimly lit rooms and those kinds of things to talk about how they're going to scheme up their teams. And so certainly, you know, you would hope that something like that could develop for the Falcons possibly, but ultimately, Abe, with the stipulations in Kirk Cousins' contract, specifically the fact that he has the no trade clause, it just makes it hard to believe that they would actually be able to work out a trade for a team, because the teams that will receive him are best suited by him by them not making that trade. And ultimately, I just don't think that there's the demand that teams would want to make sure that they're the highest bidder, and Kirk Cousins would have to want to go there to either one of those teams anyway. So I just think that whole kind of cocktail makes it unlikely that anything ultimately gets done, but they're going to take their time and let it play out.
So what does the offseason timeline look like in your mind here? There's the potential, obviously, of making some cuts, Kirk Cousins among them. There's potentials of restructuring some contracts to try and help create some cap space, extensions, re-signings, free agency, all that stuff. What does the timeline look like in terms of transactions by this team?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we're going to see. So I believe the team's open tampering window. I don't know if I have the dates off the top of my head, but I think it was March 10th is when the legal tampering window begins, which is really when free agency begins. Like, it's really not on the first day of the league year because, you know, that's frankly like when Kirk Cousins, like, you know, he didn't technically sign, but they had the agreement in place and all that. And, you know, teams have to be very careful about how they phrase that, especially when they're speaking publicly. But, I would expect that, you know, that's when moves will be starting to make to acquire players, obviously. But I think before that, you will see, you know, some of these extensions potentially, if those are on the cards, to be executed so that the money is actually freed up for this team to go out and spend the way they're going to need to in order to bolster this team. And it's not going to be a huge year of spending. You know, it all depends on how much they want to push on to further years with regards to extensions and restructurings and things like that. There are clear needs, obviously, for this team, probably on both sides of the ball. But again, especially thinking about defensively, and some of those key veteran pickups are going to be so important for the success of this team.
Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game, Atlanta Falcons insider, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. A lot bigger list of Falcons players, restricted or unrestricted, that could head to free agency. But top of the list is Drew Dolman. Is this a situation where the Falcons need to do everything they can to bring him back? And what are maybe some of the financials you could be looking at it would take to return him to this locker room?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question because it's kind of been up in the air. There's been a lot of rumors about, you know, what he's going to go for. And the thing that Drew Dolman has going for him in terms of getting the biggest contract available is that he is pretty much inarguably the best at his position in the free agent market. So those players are always going to be paid a premium because they're the best possible value add that teams can make. And so, you know, it's an interesting one for, you know, my perception of the way that the Falcons have been thinking about bringing him back, which was, you know, if you would have asked me a year ago, it wasn't even like a huge issue. I would have thought, you know, that they would easily extend him. And then he had some injury issues this past year. I still think the team was markedly better. The offensive line performed markedly better when he was in, when he was playing. I know that a lot of people say there's not too much of a difference between him and Ryan Neuville. I think that that's a little bit misguided. But I think it's also fair to say that Drew Dolman is a somewhat limited center. And so, you know, in terms of his pass protection, he's obviously had those snapping issues. And so considering that fact, how high do you want to go with this contract? And it sounds like when the rumors were, if it's like $13 million, $14 million, I would actually buy the Falcons jumping up to make that offer to bring him back because they really do value what he brings to this unit. But if what is rumored, and this is just kind of things that are spread on online and stuff like that, but if it gets much above that into like the $16, $17, I've even seen $20 million kind of thrown out there, it's hard to imagine that the Falcons can realistically, you know, consider themselves viable considering the other, you know, salary cap issues that they're dealing with at this point, and that they'll have to just go with a more value player at that position.
Or draft pick.
But then, you know, then you probably need to expect to spend premium capital, a pretty premium capital, maybe not your 15th pick, but, you know, you don't have many picks at this point. You would, you know, if he's going to be a starter for you, then you would want to make sure that that's a quality player.
Hey, answer this for me, and I think a lot of the fans are going to be invested in your response to this, and it's Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game Falcons reporter on the WadeFord.com hotline. All right, so the tampering period is a week before the deadline that the Falcons need to release Kirk Cousins. Is there a benefit in this petty world that we live in to maybe holding on to Cousins to the very last second as punishment and letting some of the other quarterbacks who are available fill some of the spots Cousins could have occupied? Is there a world in which that is how the Falcons treat this timeline?
So I think that it pretty much will be the way they treat the timeline, but I don't think that it's because of pettiness. I just think it's the best possible thing that they can do for their own party. Like, because they don't really benefit by cutting him. That's the thing, is like, there's really no benefit. That's what Terry Fontenot was saying at that end of season press conference when he was like, we're comfortable keeping him as our backup quarterback because that's already in the budget. And if you were to move off of them, unless it's a trade, it's not really going to do anything for you. And even like, it's a great point that you bring up, Abe, because, when you think about it, maybe potentially that would be the case where a team would say, okay, well, we'll do a trade for you. You're still going to need to pick up almost the entirety of the salary, but we'll take a little bit off the top. So we'll save you a couple million here, just so we can get this player in that we want at the beginning of, these negotiations while we're setting up our team. So, you made me rethink it here. Maybe there is a slight possibility for a trade in that sense. I still don't think it's going to be a huge needle mover for the Falcons, but it's a good enough reason to hold on to him because you're not really getting anything if you just let him go.
So do you think there is still a realistic possibility that they don't cut him by March 17th, that they do hold on to him beyond as a backup?
It's hard for me to see that. It's hard for me to see that because the $10 million. Once the $10 million
So let me stop you there. Then let's get into this war of words here. What Terry Fontenot said, did you think that was intended to mean into the season, or do you think that was intended to mean up until the new league year, where we're comfortable with him as our backup?
When he said it, I think he meant into the season.
Okay.
But a lot has changed since he said that.
Yeah.
With regards to what Kirk Cousins publicly revealed.
Okay, I'm just making sure we're on the same page here. So you ultimately do think, because of what he said, among some other things, that he will be cut from this team?
Correct. I think that made his situation untenable, with especially the fans, that they couldn't keep on with him. So I do think that they will be trying to get rid of him as much as they possibly can.
Joe, the fans are also going to run out of patience with Younghoe Koo. And I know there were some injury issues this past season, but there were some kicking issues as well. Riley Patterson, certainly not a solution. Kid can't hit a 55-yarder. Are you expecting a kicking competition in camp this year?
I definitely am. If anything, Abe, just for the optics of the situation, like if I was the coach of this team and, you had the struggles of that position you went through last year, you would want to kind of signal out like, hey, like we're going to get the best guy in here possible. We're not just kind of going to rest on our laurels. And if Koo wins it, then good for him. And I think that would actually instill a lot of confidence in the fan base, no matter who wins it, that you actually have a kicker who can, come through when you need him, like the Falcons didn't get last year. So I definitely think that will happen.
How much?
I don't know if it'll be with Riley Patterson though.
Better not be. How much coup do you think was about the injuries versus what seems to be a downward slide over the past couple of years in terms of his accuracy?
Yeah, no, I think that there's definite reason to think that the injuries played a part, because it was really, he was one of the most accurate kickers in NFL history, and, not the biggest sample size, but a qualifying sample size. As of, what was that, 2022, I believe it was, that he hit that mark. So, but it's kind of been downhill for him since then. Although it got particularly bad last year, and obviously the injury revelation where he was unable to play, I believe a couple games, was questionable going into some games that he played as well. I would have to think that for a kicker who relies so much on that motion, that would play a part. But again, I think we're going to find out a lot more about that this offseason when we do kind of see this expected competition take place.
Final question about the Atlanta Falcons, and it's Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game, Atlanta Falcons reporter, joining me here on the Abe TL Show. For Falcons fans who are maybe going to take a couple of chances to dial in to the NFL Combine and watch some Combine action, what do you think from the Falcons aspect they should maybe be watching for among the pass rushers or the cornerbacks or anything else they can look at?
Okay, so I was theorizing about exactly this morning while I was in the shower, right? So it's a good idea. What's funny about this is that, you should definitely be paying attention to the edge rushers and the defensive linemen. There's every indication that the Falcons will target those positions, especially with premium picks. And there is a specific metric I can advise people to look out for, and that is arm lengths. It's not the 40-yard dash, it's not the shuttle, it's not any of these like fun things that we like to watch, or quote-unquote fun things we like to watch in the NFL Combine. It's the arm length. And especially with Jeff Ulbrich coming in, Raheem Morris said last year that he and Ulbrich, when they were at the Falcons, did a study on successful defensive linemen and found like a strong correlation with arm length, with an ability to do what they need to do, shedding blocks and whatnot. And, so I think that they will stick to that. I think that you can probably, kind of cast out any players that you might think that they would draft that have kind of abnormally short arms. And I would say that you should look at a pool of the players, both in the interior and on the edge with the longer arms, and think that these are going to be the collection of players that the Falcons are targeting.
Victor Wembanyama has long arms. Would he be a good pass rusher?
You never know. I wouldn't rule him out, but probably not.
Something tells me he'd get pushed into the backfield quite easily.
He's bendy.
Joe Patrick, I also ran into you yesterday at the Atlanta United game, and obviously you've been covering the Five Stripes in detail for quite a while, alongside some of your duties here for 92.9 The Game. What a debut. Obviously, Latte Loth has two goals, including the season opener. He's also assists on the deciding winner, an absolute golazo, team golazo, but also the final touch from Edwin Mosquera was pristine. Just your thoughts on the season debut for all of the new pieces, Dyla, Miggy, Latte Loth, and what we saw leading to 3 points for the Five Stripes.
Yeah, far from a perfect game, but what a fun game. You know, just open-ended, so much of it, a lot of shots throughout. And, you saw, I think for an Atlanta United fan, it was just fun to see this explosively athletic, dynamic striker who's got great footwork, who can, you know, jump out of the gym and just be this real true dynamo that this team has not seen. Even though you've had some, like, prolific strikers like Yorgos Yagamakis, I think there's something about that player in the style of Latte Loth that is just, it gets you out of your seat, you know? Like, when he gets on the ball, you kind of just stop your breath and you just kind of watch him work, and it's really fun to see. And so I think that's the main takeaway, was just the buzz in the atmosphere inside the building, and I think a lot of fans are probably can't wait to go back or looking forward to getting to see a game if they watched that one on TV because of how it appeared last night.
My main takeaway was that Joe Patrick treated match day one like the first day of school, had a new haircut, had a brand new suit on. He was looking dapper.
The jacket. Yeah. No, it was good. It was good. Hey, I'm glad it worked. We had an impromptu scrum with the commissioner, Don Garber, there. So,
I heard. Well, Joe, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, man. Look forward to continuing combine coverage, draft coverage, The Kirk Cousins watch. It's all on as we continue this Falcons offseason. Thanks for joining me.
Love it. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, man.
All right, there you go. Joe Patrick, appreciate his time as always. We're going to talk a little bit more about Atlanta United here. I got some thoughts on the Hawks as well. And we've also got a little race going down a little south of Atlanta at Atlanta Motor Speedway. We're going to have some fun talking about that as we wrap things up in our final segment. That's coming your way in about 5 minutes on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game. Final couple minutes here on the ABTL show. Appreciate everyone hanging out and listening. Had a number of calls earlier. Also, plenty of people involved on social media, on Twitter, at Abe Gordon. Thank you guys for listening, but also participating via social media, those of you who maybe couldn't call in at the moment as well. So thanks, you guys, for hanging out here. It's been a fun little Sunday, and my Sunday's just getting started in a manner of speaking. I am amped up because the USA Track and Field Indoor Championships are on. They just started on NBC, and you guys know how much I geek out for track and field. It's like one of the – I mean, it's not like – I mean, all sports are kind of my passion, but it's of the sports that almost no one else watches, certainly at this station. It's like – I try not to miss too many events. I've been all over the place watching different events over the last month, too, as people gear up for the indoor championships. A lot of world records being broken, both here and in Europe. But I got that, and that's going to lead into, obviously, Purdue and Indiana, which is following us here next. But also it's going to lead into the Atlanta Hawks later tonight, taking on the Detroit Pistons. And the Ambetter Health 400 NASCAR event taking place today at Atlanta Motor Speedway. So a lot of stuff going on here inside and outside of Atlanta. A lot of stuff going on over the past couple of nights. The Hawks unable to get it done against Orlando. They're going to face Detroit tonight, and Detroit is the sixth seed. The Hawks are down to 9, and not overly concerned about falling to 10, but you'd like them to be able to jump up to 9 and 8 and 7, and they're right there. Like it's real compact. And then Detroit's a little bit separate of that next group. So hopefully the Hawks can pick up a home win today and figure that out. A tough go for Trae Young against Orlando, and he was very audibly frustrated with how he's being officiated. And essentially, I don't want to use any language that's deemed negative. I don't have a problem with what he said, but his plea to the officials was, hey, guys, I'm not the 19-year-old kid that came in and you didn't like my play style. Like, give me some respect a little bit. And I don't really disagree with him. And so we'll see if that makes any difference. Sometimes it can go one way, sometimes it go the other when you criticize the officials or make a plea towards the officials. But the Hawks are going to try and rebound tonight. Rebounding last night was the Atlanta United. We just talked about it for a second there with Joe Patrick. Two goals from Latte Loth, and he and Miggy assisted on the game winner from Edwin Mosquera, who came on in the 83rd minute as a sub. In the 85th minute, had an absolute golazo for a dramatic game winner. And Joe had mentioned it, right? Like, you got the win. You got the 3 points. You showed some offense. That's what's great. There's definitely some things to work on. And if you listen to the full-time report last night, the postgame, there was a lot of comments from the players saying, hey, we can do this better. We can do that better. And it's a start. It's nice to get a win, but we can be better. And that's where this team is headed. They're also playing right now without their right back and their left back. Pedro Amador was out injured due to a muscle injury. And Brooks Lennon is still on the road to recovery from his shoulder. And you get those two guys back, you keep the guys up top healthy. Speaking of Moronchuk, Saba, Latte Loth, and Miggy, you're really cooking with fire because you got Bartow, Schleish, and Matthias Klick right behind them. This team is going to have some real opportunities to do something real impressive. So looking forward to that. Braves spring training just about to get underway as well. Yesterday, Chris Sale, Bryce Elder did their thing. A little bit rougher go for Dylan Dodd, unfortunately, in that one. One of the things I didn't get a chance to talk too much about was the Atlanta Hawks today. And you're kind of right in this group of teams that could be 7, 8, or 9. It would take a pretty good run over the last, what do they have, 26 games left now? 25, 26, somewhere in there. It would take a good little run if you're going to catch Detroit. But you could very easily get to the 7th seed. I think right now that's the goal, and if you can catch Detroit, and obviously winning tonight would be a big part of that, you'll take it. But I think as long as you can get to the 7th seed, even the 8th seed, and just host a play-in round game, and maybe if you're the 7th seed, if you don't win the first one, you get to host two. I think as a team goal, that's what you're looking for. Also continue to play with the desired style of Quinn Snyder. I think we've seen a lot of that this season. We hadn't, in my opinion, seen that in years past. But I definitely think the Quinn Snyder preferred method, and it's not perfected. I think we understand that. But it feels like we're a lot closer this season than we have been in recent years. If I'm trying to look at what the goals are for these last 25, 26 games, as a team, those are the goals. Individually, Zachary Rizochet had a stat line of interest the other day. I don't remember it entirely, but I do think he had a double-double. I think he ended up getting to 10 rebounds. And that's something that we haven't really seen a ton of him doing. I mean, he's had some good games. He had some bad games. He had some good games where he's dropping some points in the bucket. We really haven't seen him get involved in being a playmaker in terms of assists or getting down to the rim and being able to help rebound the ball. We did see that a little bit, and I think that's an important aspect. He's got to develop beyond just scoring. And this is, he's never going to be a complete player if it's just, I got 18 points, one rebound, one assist. Like that's not good enough. And really it felt like for the first time he was getting involved in crashing the glass. And a lot of that has to do with matchup and what he's being asked to do defensively if his man takes him inside or if he's on the perimeter. But nice to see him get If I remember correctly, a double-double there, I believe against Orlando. Caris LeVert, George Niang, Terrence Mann. You got to figure out if these guys are part of your future as well. So you got to really dial in and see what their roles are as this team is relatively healthy. And then we'll find out at some point what's going on with Clint Capella. We can get him back for the rest of the season, or if there's some sort of impasse there. I don't know exactly what's going on, so we'll keep an eye on that. But the Hawks, again, it's not a must-win tonight, but if we're going to be realistic, you got to start to win some of these games against some of these tougher opponents. And you've done a really good job against the top tier in the Eastern Conference, and you're going to have to deal with that again a little bit later to start the month of March. You get the Bucks on March 4th, and then 92-9 the game night at the Atlanta Hawks is on March 6th. It's a Thursday night against the Indiana Pacers. But you got a game against OKC coming up. You got back-to-back in terms of games, not back-to-back nights, against Miami. First game here, second game there. So it'd be nice to get off to a good start in a moderately tough run here tonight against Detroit. So I'll be watching that. I'll be watching NASCAR at Atlanta Motor Speedway. I'll certainly be watching these track and field indoor championships as well. And be honest, by the time I get home and walk chipper and get settled, it'll probably be the second half of the basketball game that you're about to hear right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And that is Big Ten basketball, the old oak and bucket game, if you want to call it that. That's the football version, the basketball version, Purdue and Indiana. And for those of you who haven't been following, Mike Woodson, I mean, effectively he was kind of fired, but in the nicest way possible, where they let him just kind of say, hey, I'm not coming back after the season, this is it. But he did not exactly turn around Indiana the way that most Hoosiers fans would have wanted. And they're at real risk, I would say, at the time being, they are going to miss the tournament. But that could change with a win today. Purdue is 13th in the nation. They were top 10 last week, but a loss brought them back out. They're still top 15, though. If Indiana took Purdue to the brink a couple of weeks ago at Purdue, this one is at Assembly Hall in Bloomington, Indiana. And so the Hoosiers, if they have an opportunity to win today, maybe could jump and catapult a couple of teams. Maybe they go from, and I don't know specifically where the committee has them, last four out to last four in. And it's kind of in the bubble discussion. And at this point, any of those teams who are, you know, within 10 of last four, last eight, last 10, you get a win over a top 15 team, that could put you on the right side of the bubble. That's what Indiana's going to look to do next, and you can hear that game right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Again, after that, a couple hours down the road, pregame for the Atlanta Hawks tonight at 5:30 with a tip at 6. I love an early tip. I love this being an early tip on a Sunday. Let me get in, get out, and go to bed. I appreciate the Atlanta Hawks for their hospitality in regards to that. But Hawks basketball right here on 92.9 The Game. Pre-game coverage is going to start at 5:30 tonight. That's going to do it for me, Abe Gordon, here on the Abe TL Show. Thanks so much for joining me throughout the program. Appreciate the calls and participation on social media. I appreciate Joe Patrick as well. Thanks to Noel. Coming up next, Big Ten basketball, Purdue at Indiana.